providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first few segments with Robert Sinn, where he went through some of the stocks that he is looking at the end of the year that in the resource sector, boy, oh boy, they all have sold off hard. In these next two segments, we're going to take a bit more of a big picture look at markets and a wide range of other sectors as we are chatting with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies, writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, that is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail side, Rick writes the In the Know Trader and a piece called 7-Eleven, where he picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P. Rick, we're going to start off with U.S. equity markets because this week was really dominated by the Fed meeting and the Fed statement. And of course, on the back of that Fed statement, we got some almost contrary moves in a wide range of markets. And at the end of the week, if we're focusing on U.S. markets, it looked like the markets were going to be weak early on in the day on Friday, but as we're recording this, about halfway through the day, we're seeing the markets push back, take back a lot of those losses from earlier in the day, and they are very close to all-time highs. Just continues to be the narrative around these markets of any weakness seems to be bought, and as much as people want to get on the short side of that trade, well, markets bounce back very quickly. It's been the story of over a year. Rick, what's your assessment of these U.S. markets as we headed into the week, fighting back, taking back a lot of those losses and ending close to all-time highs?
Yeah, so Corey, this morning, interestingly, the market was down enough to make new lows on the week. And as you say now, the S&P is almost unchanged on the day after being down, I don't know, close to what, 50 points or so, something like that. The low today was 4,600, went right to, you know, that main figure. And now we're at 46.63, so a huge bounce back. But this is kind of the volatility that you'd expect to have with the Omicron virus, with the fact that, you know, the Fed became much more hawkish earlier this week, and the market rallied after that news and then gave it all back. And now it's, you know, it's mid-range again, kind of for the week. It shows you that investors right now are somewhat confused in which way to play, and you're going to see these movements both ways. And my guess is just when you think you've really got a handle on which way the next trend is going to be, it's going to snap back in your face the other direction. I mean, it's very easy to get very bearish this morning. And now, you know, if you sold earlier in the day, you've got decent losses already of at least 1%. That happened very quickly. So it reminds me a bit of what we've seen previously this year. But also, if you go back to a year ago when COVID was hadn't quite spread globally yet, but we knew it existed kind of in China, it was starting to move around. People are replaying what's occurred over time in both directions and with the volatility that you expect, because ultimately you can say that the big COVID sell-off from March 2020 bottomed and we've had a huge rally since. So people think that, you certainly have enough people who think that at this point, whatever Omicron is going to do, it'll be somewhat short-term. We might get a pullback, but it's all going to be, you know, potential entry to get in on the long side again with another major rally coming. Those who know how much the market sold off last year before we made that bottom are saying, you know, from an S&P that keeps stalling just north of 4,700, and even this week inability to make new all-time high close or anything like that. So we made a new intraday high this week. But that same day that made that new intraday high closed on the low, just around down to 4,600. So we keep seeing these huge reversal type days. And to me, the most important level is 44.43 on Friday closes. As long as we stay above that level, it's about 220 points beneath where we are now. This bull market is fine and just expectedly erratic given a change in the Fed, given Omicron going into the winter and the fact that these viruses usually get worse in cold weather. And it is spreading like wildfire across the U.S. Significantly. And it is something where, this virus is something we're going to have to continuously deal with. We had the first the COVID, then the Delta variant. Now we have the Omicron variant. And I'm no doctor. I can't tell you if this is the type of thing that is just one of many variants that are going to come, or if we get a handle on Omicron, is that going to be kind of towards the end of things? I don't know. All I know is that this, the COVID virus and its related variants are here, and we've got to deal with it. And whatever your politics are, the reality is that this is a global situation. And when it comes to the markets, expect continued volatility as we go through the winter. I suspect that Omicron will get worse, and hopefully it's not as bad a strain as Delta is, and we have to all live with it, but expect volatility into 2022. I don't see a sell-off coming like we had in early 2020, don't be surprised if the markets, get knocked down every once in a while. But again, I'll reiterate, 44, 43 in the S&P to me is the key level. And as long as you stay above there on Friday closes, the bull market is still a bull market. Under there, I change my tune.
Yeah, Rick, for as much as COVID does impact these markets, it really just brings in fear here and there, but that fear seems to dissipate very quickly and markets seem to move back very quickly, or at least that's been the theme of this year. And you know what? A lot of eyes have been on the Fed, but there's one thing you've been pointing out to a lot of your subscribers that you think it's more about the bond market, more so credit spreads in terms of where the markets are going. This ties almost directly into just availability of money and funds for larger hedge funds, larger investors to put into the market. Why are credit spreads so important in your eyes, and what levels are you watching?
So credit spreads are kind of a generic term for the corporate bond market yields versus treasury market yields. And they widen out when you've got some concerns that affect the market. So, for instance, the spread that I watch, which is the ICE Bank of America U.S. Corporate Index, OAS, option adjusted spread, reached just over 4% at the height of COVID mania back in early 2020. So the spreads between corporates, AAA corporates, and treasuries were over 4% at the height of the sell-off in stocks. They reversed as the bull market came back, or better said, as spreads came in, helping the bull market to fuel itself, because I do think credit spreads often give you the best clue before stocks are going to move of what the credit market thinks of the overall risk level in the marketplace. And traditionally on Wall Street, and a lot of stock individual investors wouldn't know this, but the smartest money has always been said to be in the fixed income market. So looking at clues from the fixed income market, in this case, a credit spread, you get a very good sense of where the biggest players on the street, and realize that the fixed income side is as big as the stock market is. The fixed income side is huge, and people don't put on $250,000 positions the way a hedge fund, or even it could be multi-million-dollar position. On the credit side, these are huge positions that get placed by large institutions. So getting a sense of what they're thinking often is the price leader to what happens in the stock market. So this ICE Bank of America Corporate Index OAS spread that I look at had widened out to 4% in March 2020. It then quickly turned around, which gave a clue that excess liquidity and excess fear had changed on the fixed income side, and ultimately that helped fuel bottom out the stocks and help fuel the rally. That spread fell all the way down to as low as 86 basis points earlier this year. But before it hit 86 basis points, it rallied up on the when stocks sold off in February and March. This spread had actually widened out to 104 basis points before ultimately making not only a cyclical low, but a secular low down to 86 bips. It double bottomed at 86 bips and then started moving up over the last month or so. So stocks have been sideways, but the spread started moving out, saying there's some concern, not big time, because we just a week ago or a week and a half ago, we got to the same 104 basis points that had reached on the decline earlier this year. When stocks sold off, the credit spread had gotten up to 1.04%. We got there again a week and a half ago, and currently the data has a one-day lag. So as of yesterday, it's 101 basis points. If we get above 104 on the spread and stay above 104, that's a bad sign for stocks. And it doesn't mean we're going to get a big sell-off, but there's so much there's room up to 133 basis points before we'd have like kind of the next level of resistance. So it would imply if this spread breaks out above 104 and stays above 104 bips, then it would imply that you're going to see some pressure on stocks. So I'm not talking about a 10% decline or something, but it would imply that there's more fear on the credit side, and therefore that will likely precede a decline in stocks. So it is something to watch, and I suggest, if your listeners can watch that themselves, it's just an additional clue to help give you a real sense of which way the stock market is likely going to go. So that's why I watch it.
The nice thing about that is it's a financial clue, right? Because as much as the Fed and COVID news can drive markets, there isn't a chart to judge any of that kind of stuff when it comes quite as straightforward as credit spreads. Let's also talk about the U.S. dollar, because the U.S. dollar, for as much negativity was around the dollar heading into this year, is actually having a pretty good year, and it is closing in on one of your targets here. The dollar currently right around 96.35 on the dollar index. Rick, let's start off with a big picture. Why were so many commentators wrong about the dollar this year?
I don't know what the impetus was to be that bearish, but as I've said to you and before on this show, it was the biggest global macro consensus trade coming into 2021 is that the dollar would fall apart. And the same time that as we were entering January of 2021, the models we use and place a lot of value on were suggesting that the dollar could likely bottom right then and there. So in my outlook for this year, I actually compared what I thought was going to happen this year in the dollar to what happened in 2017. So to go back to that just for a second, when Donald Trump won the election in November of 2016, the dollar ripped to the upside for the balance of the 7 weeks or so that were remaining in 2016, and it was expected that the dollar would rip higher into his presidency. So going into 2017, the biggest consensus global macro call across Wall Street was that the dollar would be very strong in 2017. That ended up being dead wrong, and the dollar peaked, made the high for 2017 on the very first trading day of the year. And it eroded the entire year to close on the low of 2017. So strategists on the street could not have been more wrong. We noticed that same thing coming into this year, but in reverse. We were getting buy signals at the same time that the global macro strategists were saying the dollar would be horrific this year. And we cautioned clients about listening to that and said, the risk is actually in being short the dollar, you want to be long the dollar. And if the pattern holds true, then 2021, the dollar index with, you know, 2 weeks to go or so of trading, will likely close on or near the high of this year. Again, making the bulk of the strategists as wrong as they could have been, because the dollar bottomed in 2021 in the first week in January. And it has not been steadily higher all year, but it is significantly higher than where we started the year, which was down in the 89 handle for the dollar index. And now we're talking about almost 96 and a half. So a significant move in the way that analysts did not correctly anticipate. So I've been looking to actually fade this up move in between 96 and a half to 98 in the dollar index. And we've gotten there over the last 3 weeks or so, multiple times we've gotten above 96 and a half to sell off under 96. So for, you know, trading, it's been very good levels. It wouldn't surprise me if we get one more jolt higher into year end and close right near the highs. But I'd actually think that anywhere from roughly 96 and a half up to about 98 or so is where I'm willing to fade the rally. I don't know yet what the largest macro call is right now and where they stand on the dollar. I can tell you, and we'll shift a little bit here, that crypto is actually right now, from what I can tell, the biggest consensus short for 2022. And just based on history, if that's the largest consensus short, my guess is they're not going to be right. Now, it doesn't mean crypto can't be down net-net in 2022, but it may be down minimally, or they could be very right or very wrong. If I had to guess which one of those three, I'd say they're probably wrong, and that there can be some weakness in crypto. We're already, you know, in Bitcoin terms, we're already in the mid 40,000s. It's off of a high in the upper 60,000s. So it's already had a, you know, a big correction. We got as low as, I think, 28,800 in the front month futures contracts on the sell off we had earlier this year. And then we lifted up, you know, to new all time highs from there. So I probably use the continued weakness in crypto to look to buy if you're looking for longer term returns. But look, Bitcoin does have a major double top in the mid to upper 60,000s. Ethereum has a major double top near the upper 3,000s to near 4,000. So you've got to be really a confirmed bull in crypto and kind of live through all these drawdowns if you're really thinking that Bitcoin's going $100,000 or more, you know, per coin, and that Ethereum's ultimately going to, you know, $10,000, which plenty of people think. So these are more kind of buy and close your eyes type ideas. They're, you know, hard to call them investments per se, but I guess in certain ways, if you really think that cryptocurrencies are going to be significant in the future, then yeah, you got to kind of buy them on weakness and close your eyes and be willing. And I say this, I've said it to every time I talk about crypto, no matter what group I'm talking to, whether it's at a conference, whether it's in an interview like this, you know, the media, whatever money you put into crypto, you have to be prepared to lose it all, and your life can't change it all. So if you're taking, if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're putting a significant amount of money into crypto, I think that's a very foolish move. You've probably done decently so far, but of course it depends on where you got in. But crypto is a huge gamble. And, you know, whatever money I've put into crypto myself so far, if I lost it all, it's not going to change the way I live. It's not going to stop me from being able to pay bills. It's not going to stop me and my family from taking vacation, etc. It is kind of play money, and I picked a certain amount I was willing to potentially lose all of on the chance that, you know, I could make a 10 times return on my money over several years. And that's the way I look at it. So it's pure gambling type money. And I think that's the way most people should look at it, because despite what we know about it, we also know how much we don't know about it. And it's adopting, and will people actually pay with crypto, you know, down the road? Are you going to go into a Starbucks, buy a cup of coffee and pay with crypto? I kind of don't think so. So I don't know how universally this would actually be used as compared to it being an investment, let's call it that, that is attached to the greater fool theory, meaning you buy it because you think somebody's going to pay more than you. We simply don't know. It has no inherent value. It's, you know, to me, it's still very much in the category of gambling. But I'm willing to take a very small portion of my overall portfolio and put it into the gamble.
So you're willing to gamble just a little bit. But I understand why, right? Yeah. It's volatile. And quite frankly, there has been a lot of money made in cryptos. I find it so fascinating and fun to follow along with. But you are right. If you're depending on that money for daily living expenses or even vacations.
Yeah. And look, I have a couple of friends who have been in, you know, Bitcoin from when it was 5,000 or less. And, you know, they've made 10 times their money. And that's great. But when I read that there are certain, and it tends to be people who are generally 35 and under, who have 50% or more of their investable dollars in crypto, you're certainly not thinking a heck of a lot about the future. You're trying to be the next Mark Zuckerberg or somebody, you know, you want to be the next billionaire. And to me, you want to take that chance? Fine, do it with, you know, a few percent of your portfolio and make money that way. But I don't know, maybe I'm too conservative. I'm just not going to put all my eggs in one basket and hope that, you know, this works out in the end, as compared to knowing that if I'm a 30-year-old and I know I can put money into a retirement account that is tax-free for the next 40 years until I start taking out that money when I'm, you know, 70, I'd much rather do that, knowing the history of the stock market and the growth of corporate America over time, than I do on hoping that, you know, crypto makes me a zillionaire. So sure, you want to take, you know, 5% max of your money and put it there, that's fine. But it's a gamble.
So let's wrap it up with a quick comment on the gold market, because this market's been pretty interesting post-Fed announcement, because gold did drop on the back of that Fed announcement, but it's gained something like $60 just from that announcement on Wednesday and is now just marginally above 1800. That has some of the gold bulls encouraged, but if you look at a longer-term chart, especially mostly for this year, it's been trending slightly lower and really just stuck around that 1800 level. Pretty boring market. What's your outlook for gold here as we head into next year?
Well, if we're going to talk about gold, you'll have to wake me up from the long sleep of what it's been like being in gold this year. It has not been an asset that's returned you anything, really. It's been a very, very quiet sideways market. So we came into the year at, I don't know, somewhere near, I think it was like 1900. And, you know, here we are just at 1800. So you've lost money in gold. And a couple of things here. So gold is typically the type thing you keep in your portfolio as a hedge against inflation, as a hedge against disaster. But with the S&P up, you know, 25%, give or take, for the year, not only have you lost a little money in gold, but whatever money you had in gold, you've lost the opportunity to make 25% if you were just, let's say, in a passive invested ETF of the spiders or something that represents the stock market. But the reason you're in gold in the first place is as a hedge. So similar to, I guess, what you want to say about Bitcoin now or cryptos, you know, it's an asset that essentially gives you some protection against downside, some protection against inflation. But the funny thing is this year, with inflation being rampant and on the highest levels historically that we've seen, gold has done nothing. So perhaps it's lost its appeal on the, you know, as inflation protection. Now, you also have to take into consideration that the dollar has moved up this year, and a strong dollar is negative for gold. So a lot of the reason gold hasn't done anything this year is just how much the dollar's moved up. And, you know, it moved from 89 to 96 in the dollar index. It's over 7%, is a significant move for the dollar. And that is going to hamper the ability for precious metals, most especially gold, to rally. So there's, you know, gold has some headwinds that it's kind of faced, but inflation should have been a tailwind, and it's really done nothing. Short term, however, gold held where it needed to on the recent decline earlier this week, right around 1750. And as you say, it's right now front month futures are trading at 1805. So yes, it has bounced 60 bucks or so from that low. And I actually like it very short term. I put on a long gold position for a fund I trade simply because I now have a very defined risk underneath Wednesday's low. If we break Wednesday's low, I get out of the trade. I lose, let's say, 2%. And I'm willing to put on a trade if I can keep loss to 2%. And on the upside, I'm probably not going to make a heck of a lot more than 2%. So risk-reward-wise, it's not great. But I do think the fact that gold held where it did gives me a minor bullish stance on gold for, I don't know, trade up to 1850, something like that. So nothing big here. It's still within its range. And I don't know. The long-term fundamentals still say gold is bullish. But the gold market itself, you know, what it's done in 2021 has been wholly unimpressive.
It really has been. It's been boring, but I guess yep. You're slightly encouraged. The problem is so many other markets have done better. And even on the other side, so many markets have shown more volatility, which does attract more traders in. So yeah. Gold's kind of suffering on both of those fronts. Rick, great having you on the show, buddy. I've really enjoyed all of our conversations this year. I really appreciate all the time you spend with us. We'll be chatting in the new year. And hey, I hope you keep up your calls because they really have been spot on through most of this year. Rick,
well,
thank you.
For it.
As always, buddy, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend and very happy holiday season.
Same to you, Corey. It's been a pleasure.